I'll tell you something funny about this collection. The first title was Too Jewish.
Oh my goodness, really?
Don't you think the stories are really too Jewish?
Shalom and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Rabbi Alexander Seinfeld and Dr. Daniel Grove, authors of Body and Soul, The Torah Path to Health, Fitness, and a Holy Life. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. The opinions of the host and guests on Too Jewish are their own and not those of the radio station. Too Jewish is paid for by Too Jewish Radio Programs and Podcast, Tucson, Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. The 4th of July is coming up this week, making it a perfect time for us to explore our twinned identity as Jews and Americans. You know, I remember when I was a teenager growing up in Los Angeles, I attended a teen Jewish retreat at a camp outside of town that explored exactly that theme. The story is a little complicated because the retreat was run at a camp in Malibu for Temple Emmanuel of Beverly Hills, California, all of which sounds very snobby, you know, Malibu and... Only I wasn't actually from Beverly Hills. My dad just worked as the cantor there. I was from the wrong side of the tracks, the L.A. side, what Jackie Mason used to call Beverly Hills adjacent, meaning not Beverly Hills and not rich. And at that point, I hadn't exactly spent my life either in Malibu or Beverly Hills. In any case, the theme of this mid-1970s retreat was, are we American Jews or are we Jewish Americans? The core of the question for us teens was one of identity. Did we identify more as Jews who happened to live in America or as Americans who happened to be Jews? It was a challenging question in an era when Jews were just escaping from charges of dual loyalty that had dogged us, as it dogged Catholics and many others for much of American history. As I recall, almost all of the teenagers present decided quickly that we were Americans who happened to be Jews, although we were certainly proud of being Jewish, which was some sort of a concession to the way the powers that be had constructed the retreat. As I also remember, shortly after that, they asked us to pretend that our civilization was about to be destroyed, and they gave us a series of objects, a Torah, a talis, an encyclopedia, a copy of the Declaration of Independence, Shabbat candlesticks, and things like that, and asked us to break into groups and decide which three objects we would preserve in the event of a catastrophic nuclear war. Another 13-year-old and I, she was the daughter of the temple president, later became my first girlfriend, got kind of bored with the program and we decided to liven it up. So we just absconded with the Torah and slipped outside to look at the stars and talk to each other. When the camp counselors and directors found us, we were sitting under the stars. She was wearing a very hip 1974 jeans jacket, as I recall, and we were discussing, well, not whether we were more American than Jewish or the other way around. We were just getting acquainted, two American teenagers starting to get to know each other, holding the small Torah between us in the cold night air. And the counselors came up and busted the cantor's son and the president of the temple's daughter for stealing the Torah. Well, maybe in our own way, we really were exploring just what being American Jews meant to us in that moment, in our adolescent way. You know, the theme of that retreat sticks with me now because we live in a very different kind of America all these years later. Jews have run for president, been cabinet officers and Supreme Court justices, become a big part of the Senate and the House, had lots of films and TV shows made about us, been accepted to country clubs and all kinds of social organizations, owned and played on World Series and Super Bowl and even NBA winning teams, been widely accepted within American society to a degree that seems to imply, at least most of the time, full acceptance by almost all of America. Well, you know, except for the anti-Semites, of course. Today, the issues we face are much more focused on whether we will choose to practice our Judaism in meaningful, resilient, enduring ways now that we are fully American. In a way, our acceptance itself has at times been a bit disillusioning. You know, what happens when you get what you ask for and the results aren't quite what you expect? Here we Jews are now about as American as baseball and apple pie, and it turns out that means often we become about as Jewish as apple pie, too. Reminds me of a Paul Simon song from that era, his lovely and slightly sad American tune about all American immigrants' embrace of liberty and the disappointments and pragmatism of making it through each day. To highlight the bluesy quality of Simon's original song, Mandy Patinkin recorded it in Yiddish on his Mamaloshen album. I think that's a perfect play-in for this Two Jewish show, honoring the upcoming 4th of July, to be American, Jewish, hopeful, and a little sad. Kind of perfect, really.
Ich bin heiß kein Mutschetno. Wer schricht sich aber es so lustig, freidig sein, als euren Goll ist Goll. Als euren Goll ist Goll. Seinen meine Bekannte alle zunehmen ist. Ich hab kein Fein, was geht im Wollen. Weiß mir auch allem, was ist nicht und siehst. Von Keulisch geworden heuer, nur gut ist es, gut als euch. Azoi lach heikele. Nu ich will von unser Begona kleinem Freund, wo seinen mir verfolgen. Sei moecha, wo seinen mir verfolgen. Und der Malach am Nehmt meine Schöne, putze mir euch ein, sie guckt darauf in die Leute, schmeckt bei euch ein, und ich fliehe wie ein Maler. Und unten sehen, bei Deugen sind weit, die Statue of Liberty, wo sie Gold weit von ihr. Und ich flieh wie ein Malach. Zu helles Heilen führt uns der größer Schiff. Euch alle Wohne schief mir ringen. Der Schof und Geurel ist mit uns schön da. Alid von Amerika mir singen, nur gut ist es, gut als euch, euch abbrochen hat an ihm. Der heinte Kirche bis wird morgen euch weg, sich obruhen ist mein Zweck. Azoi sich opuen is mein Zweck.
The paradoxical nature of American Jewish identity is particularly appropriate in that song, considering that when Paul Simon wrote American Tune, the President of the United States, Richard Nixon, felt free to be brutally anti-Semitic in his private comments, while publicly having Henry Kissinger run his foreign policy. and that Nixon and Kissinger basically saved Israel during the Yom Kippur War that year by arranging an emergency airlift of supplies and ammunition. And Paul Simon received the first ever Library of Congress George Gershwin Prize for Popular Song about, 15 years ago. An absolutely American prize named after a Jewish popular songwriter, awarded in its inaugural year to a Jewish popular songwriter. Good stuff. And yet, Paul Simon just released a new album, which is very spiritual and kind of meditative, filled with late-in-life ideas and riffs. He is no spring chicken. Well, that part of his album seems very Jewish, but the ideas in the song, well, they don't seem Jewish in any other way. Very American Jewish. Or is it Jewish American? In any case, our guests on Too Jewish this morning explore how traditional Judaism can and should be used to encourage physical health as well as virtue and religious commitment. Find out what Rabbi Alexander Seinfeld and Dr. Daniel Grove's new book, Body and Soul, The Torah Path to Health, Fitness, and a Holy Life, is all about when we meet them in just a moment here on Too Jewish.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson.
Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaqui Tribe.
We are delighted to welcome the two Jewish art guests this morning. They are Rabbi Alexander Seinfeld and Dr. Daniel Grove, the co-authors of Body and Soul, The Torah Path to Health, Fitness, and a Holy Life, a really interesting book. Good morning and welcome to Too Jewish.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So I'm going to start kind of a little bit distant. I remember long ago when I was a young chazan, the great Rabbi Moshe Feinstein of blessed memory, who was one of perhaps the most important decisor on Jewish law at the time, had the opportunity to tell people that smoking was against halacha and chose not to do so. And I think I've been troubled by that for the last many years. Your book approaches physical health from an extraordinarily Jewish perspective. Tell us about how this originated.
Well, Dr. Grove and I started this process, this journey independently. We were both, he's obviously a medical doctor, and he has seen through his practice, I'll let him speak for himself, but just summarizing, you know, his journey was, obviously, I'm a Jewish doctor, I've got patients, and who are, you know, not taking care of their health, okay? And I'm looking at the Jewish communities that I interact with, and I interact with a lot of them, and seeing unhealthy people, and it breaks my heart that they are going to the hospital and getting sick or going into wheelchairs and walkers for preventable causes. And not only that, I see that a lot of the underlying cause of that is these preventable causes are food related, and I see that when I go to a Jewish event, whether it be a wedding or a oneg, you know, on Shabbat or something, I see how a lot of Jewish people relate to food. It doesn't look very holy to me, and I'm wondering, this is 10 years ago, is there a connection between these two things I'm witnessing, the way we deal with food, present food, and consume food, and health outcomes that I'm seeing? That's what started me. I was trying to solve a problem,
right?
A double problem.
And Dr. Grove, was it a similar motivation for you?
So my sort of journey was not necessarily specifically in the Jewish community. I was in my training. I specialized in pulmonary and critical care medicine, and part of the pulmonary medicine, we do sleep medicine. And so the number one risk factor for obstructive sleep apnea is obesity. So I was finding myself counseling my patients on weight loss frequently, and it took quite a bit of time. And so I had my patients in the clinic with sleep apnea. I was counseling, but then I was also seeing in the ICU just the sort of the end result of years of, you know, poor health, lack of exercise, obesity. I was seeing it from the full gamut. So I set out to write a pamphlet for my patients just to kind of explain them, because there's so much that I think that if you understood what the weight does to your body and how exercise reverses it and how diet can make a difference in your life, that if there's a certain population of people that if they just knew, it would be enough to motivate them. So I wanted to make a pamphlet I could give out to people, but it ended up being very long. So I self-published it as a book, just to help to give to my patients. And then I was connected with Rabbi Seinfeld, who, you know, was able to say, like, obviously I'd also seen this in the community and how this is causing a problem in amongst the Jewish community. And it was, you know, obviously very difficult to watch. So when Rabbi Seinfeld came to me and said, oh, hey, we should do something, like, we should combine these two. Let me, you know, Rabbi Seinfeld brings the Torah and the halacha and all the sort of religious aspects, and I would be able to bring the medical explanation, that we can combine something that can really maybe have an impact on the community, change the conversation about, you know, diet, about exercise, about all these things, health, etc. Then I was, that was a no-brainer. Of course, I was going to try to be a part of that.
Can I just add something?
Sure.
You reminded me, because this is 10 years ago, there was another flashpoint in my mind when I started this journey, which was, I do a lot of basic Jewish education, you know, beginners who are learning Torah for the first time as adults. And
of course,
somebody had asked me, what does the Torah say about this? The Torah, you know, is it a mitzvah, and what are the parameters? And so I also was just researching it intellectually to try to answer that question for my students. Because I all my life I knew that it makes sense to be healthy. It's good sense, good common sense. But to what extent is it a mitzvah, in a Jewish sense or in a religious sense? That I could not answer 10 years ago. And I wanted to answer that.
How interesting, because it isn't really something that we learn early. You know, these are the mitzvot, and one of the mitzvot is caring for your body. We will talk much more with Rabbi Alexander Seinfeld and Dr. Dan Grove. Their book is Body and Soul, a really interesting guide from the Torah, from traditional sources, on taking care of your own life. When we come back in a moment here on Two Jewish. Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a wonderful Jewish synagogue in northwest Tucson in the Catalina foothills, celebrates a fabulous array of services, classes, and events this summer. Established by passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha is a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. Progressive congregation in northwest Tucson and the foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everyone throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Join us in person for Shabbat services Friday night or Saturday morning or both, or come on Facebook Live. Go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org, for more information. We welcome members and guests in our sanctuary in person. Call 520-276-5675. Religious school registrations open now for school-aged children and grandchildren. Join us in our fabulous Hebrew school, Bar and Bat Mitzvah programs, Torah Tykes Experience, Confirmation, Teen programs, all in a fun, relaxed setting with great Jewish learning. Go to Beit Simcha Tucson, BeitSimchaTucson.org. To sign up. Beit Simcha services, classes, and events are open to everyone. You can come Friday night in person or come to our Facebook page. It's Beit Simcha Tucson, BeitSimcha Tucson. Friday night services are at 6:30 p.m. for celebration services, followed by Noneg Shabbat. Saturday morning, Torah studies at 9 a.m. Services are at 10. All of our Adult Education Academy classes, and we have a brand new one, the Deuteronomy Project, starting soon. They are all live and on Zoom. You can access those by going to the website, BeitSimchaTucson.org. Religious School is available in blended format too, some students live, some on Zoom. For more information about Beit Simcha to come to services, our great religious school and Torah Tikes programs, bar and bat mitzvah, confirmation, high school programs, and rich array of adult education academy courses taught live and on Zoom, and of course all of our services in person and on Facebook, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. That's 520-276-5675. BeitSimchaTucson.org. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, and the fastest growing Jewish congregation in all of Southern Arizona. Do you know someone who personally made a major difference for the whole Jewish people? An individual who's done important work for Klal Yisrael and deserves to be highly recognized for that effort. As president of the Kohan Memorial Foundation, I'm grateful that the modest cash awards we started more than 10 years ago have grown into a substantial amount of unrestricted funds given to winners, with the help of donors like many of you. The foundation, named for my grandparents, Rabbi Samuel S. Kohan and Irma Kohan, makes these awards for important service to Klal Yisrael, the entire Jewish people. That service can be in one of four activities: unity, education, creative arts, or rescue. Past Kohan Award recipients are remarkable people who've done outstanding work. If you know someone who qualifies for a Kohan Foundation Award, please go to kohanaward.com, kohanaward.com, and fill out the simple nomination form. That website is kohanaward.com. Nominate an individual or donate yourself. Do it for the whole Jewish people. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's twojewishradio18@gmail. Or visit our website, twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through our website, twojewishradio.com, twojewishradio.com. Streaming us from there or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store, it's very popular Jewish podcasts. Top 10 in America, according to Moment Magazine. A couple of 100,000 downloads on Podbean and on Spotify, too. Post a rating, review Too Jewish, wherever you listen to us. Those comments help. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of Southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
So Turkey's runoff election ended without actually any great shock. Erdogan was re-elected to power for who knows how long. What's your take on this?
Theoretically, at least, it's 5 more years.
Theoretically, 5 more years.
And, you know, he didn't, it wasn't a landslide victory. It was like 52 to 48. So there was clearly a strong and growing opposition to Erdogan's leadership. The people who got him elected were conservative religious women, both in Istanbul and in the interior. But rather than dissect the election, let's look at its implications for American policy interests and Israeli policy interests, if you want.
Yeah, absolutely.
So first of all, now that Erdogan is no longer a candidate, and now that he doesn't have to be demonstrably super nationalist, he can go back to a more positive relationship with Israel, which has benefited him in the past, and it certainly benefits Israel. And there's a very healthy two-way trade. There's a lot of Turkish workers in the construction industry in Israel, which would fall apart without all those Turks. And there's also a very healthy flow of tourists, mostly from Israel to Turkey, not vice versa. But that's because Israel is a much wealthier country, and all the South Shore resorts in Turkey have casinos, which seem to attract Israelis. And it's one of the closest places they can go, certainly a lot closer than Las Vegas or even New Jersey. So Erdogan is clearly warming Turkey's relations with Israel, and he's softening Turkey's opposition to NATO membership for Sweden. They already agreed to NATO membership for Finland, and now Sweden is the only outstanding candidate. And it looks like, you know, after a few more rounds of talks and symbolic gestures on each side, that Turkey will lift its objections and Sweden will swim into NATO. Probably not in time for the NATO summit next month, but in the near future.
So Erdogan has been in power for 12 years? I don't know. It seems like a very long time.
It's either 15 or 20.
Okay. He has definitely shown dictatorial tendencies, and that included suppressing dissent, arresting journalists, disappearing some political opposition leaders, seeking to extradite opposition leaders who fled back to Turkey, kind of the whole fascist playbook, really. And yet here he was in a democratic election that he could have lost.
Right. And had he lost it, my money is on him leaving relatively graciously, without too much of a fuss or without trying to subvert the process. But, you know, it wasn't a cliffhanger in the end.
Right. It wasn't that close. Right.
It wasn't a landslide victory, but it wasn't a cliffhanger either. It wasn't a question of a few hanging chads or whatever. we've had our right. share of this stuff. Right. But
I just need a few more votes.
I think that Turks have always been comfortable with the quote-unquote strongman version of a leader.
Yeah, it's not like Ataturk was a weakling.
Right. And they, as a nation, they tend to respect authority. And they tend to appreciate authoritarian leaders more than some nations, less than others. I mean, I don't think they're as bad as the Russians in this regard. But they have less aversion to strong centralized authority than most other Western countries do.
Well, and as you've noted, there's now kind of a Turkish-Israel rapprochement in process, which makes a lot of sense in so many ways. Tom, thanks very much. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Morris is on his deathbed. His wife, his daughter, his two sons are all gathered around him. Everyone knows the end is near. Morris says, "Bernie, I want you should take the Beverly Hills house." His wife objects. "Bernie? He needs Beverly Hills with his arrogance? Better leave it to Rachel." Morris says, To my daughter Rachel, I leave half my stocks and bonds. His wife pipes up, Rachel, she knows from business. The girl can't add two and two. Better leave them to Bernie. Morris continues, to my youngest son, Jeremy, I leave my fleet of vintage cars. What? Yells his wife. 3 tickets he got just last month. Morris turns to his wife and says, Sylvia, who's dying here, me or you? That was the Old Jewish Joke of the Week special feature of Two Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week we read a portion from the middle of the book of Numbers. It is named after a man named Pinchas, whose story really began at the end of last week's portion of Balak. The situation's familiar. For the umpteenth time, the people of Israel have been disobeying the Torah and worshiping other gods. This time, the apostasy has reached epidemic proportion. Even the elite leadership of the people has begun to sample the religious wares of the Midianites and Moabites. Finally, one of the princes of the people challenges the very authority of Moses publicly, taking a sacred prostitute into his tent while the whole assembly watches. As Moses and the other elders stand by in shock, unable to respond to such a chutzpahdik act, a young Kohen, a priest named Pinchas, steps forward. He kills the wayward prince and his consort and breaks the spell of false religious practice. For this act, he is rewarded by God, which seems to validate his violent vigilantism, but there is more to the story than meets the eye. For Pinchas's reward for killing the couple is a brit shalom, a covenant of peace. Neither he nor any of his descendants is ever again permitted to go to war or to carry a spear. He must instead minister to the needs of the tabernacle, the rituals of the altar, and of purification and sacrifice. He can never engage in any more acts of violence. Pinchas has broken the Israelites' latest fascination with paganism, but never again will that level of religious violence be tolerated by Judaism. It must instead be sublimated to serve the needs of the community, an ongoing lesson about the dangers of religious fanaticism. For Judaism refuses to countenance the kind of religious insanity that led to the Crusades, or Jihad, or the Inquisition, or any kind of religious terrorism. In spite of the occasional anomaly, our religious fervor is never designed to lead to violence. We are committed, as Jews, fervently and firmly to the same brit shalom, the covenant of peace that God places on Pinchas. So may it always be. When we return in a moment, our guests this morning, Rabbi Alexander Seinfeld and Dr. Daniel Grove, will explain what motivated them to create a book uniting the traditional sources of Judaism with valuable ways for Jews to seek and maintain personal health. It's all in their new release, Body and Soul. Find out all about it when we return in a moment on Two Jewish.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Sheldon Harnick, the lyricist of the musical Fiddler on the Roof and co-creator of the Broadway musical and the film and many other musicals, died last week at the age of 99. A successful Broadway composer, lyricist, and show fixer, his idea to create a musical based on the gentle, humorous, humane stories of Shalom Aleichem sparked a musical of universal appeal that has been produced all over the world in over 100 languages. For a few decades there, you could not attend a Jewish wedding or even a bar mitzvah without hearing those words sung. Tony and Grammy Award-winning lyricist Sheldon Harnick, who with composer Jerry Bock made up one of the premier musical theater songwriting duos of the 50s and 60s, with shows like Fiorello and the Apple Tree, as well as Fiddler, was known for his wry, subtle humor and deft wordplay. Harnick and Bock first had success with the music and lyrics to Fiorello, which earned them each Tony Awards and a rare Pulitzer Prize in 1960. In addition, Harnick and Bock were nominated for Tonys in 1967 for The Apple Tree, in 1971 for The Rothschilds, and in 1994 for Cyrano the Musical, but their masterpiece, of course, was Fiddler on the Roof. Bock and Harnick were first introduced at a restaurant by actor Jack Cassidy after the opening night performance of Shangri-La, a musical in which Harnick helped with the lyrics. The first Harnick-Bock musical was The Body Beautiful in 1958. I think in all the years we worked together, I only remember one or two arguments, and those were at the beginning of the collaboration when we were still feeling each other out, Harnick said. Once we got past that, Bock was wonderful to work with. They would form one of the most influential partnerships in Broadway history. Producers Robert Griffith and Hal Prince liked the songs from The Body Beautiful. They contracted Bock and Harnick to write the score for their next production, Fiorello, a musical about the reformist mayor of New York City. Bock and Harnick then collaborated on Tenderloin in 1960 and She Loves Me 3 years later. Neither was a hit, although She Loves Me won a Grammy for Best Score from a Cast Album, and it has some great songs. But their next one was a monster that continues to be performed worldwide, Fiddler on the Roof. It earned two Tonys in 1965. Based on the Tevye the Dairyman stories by Shalom Aleichem, adapted into a libretto by Joseph Stein, Fiddler dealt with the experience of Eastern European Orthodox Jews in the Russian village of Anatevka in the year 1905, pogroms, and the Jews' expulsion. It starred Zero Mostel as Tevye, had an almost 8-year run, and offered the world stunning songs like Sunrise, Sunset, If I Were a Rich Man, and Matchmaker, Matchmaker. The most recent revival on Broadway starred Danny Burstein as Tevye, a role played in the movie by Chaim Topol, and earned a Best Revival Tony nomination. Harnick loved to talk about Fiddler virtually to the end of his life, and it gave lots of Americans the ability to mispronounce the Jewish drinking word. I have to admit, although it has become so overdone and trite, I still have a special connection to Fiddler on the Roof. My high school production of it was my second full-on musical and won a citywide award in Los Angeles for Best Play, and I've been forced to sing one song or another, especially Miracle of Miracles when I was young and Sunrise, Sunset, and Weddings, in so many performances over the years that I probably know all of Harnick's lyrics by heart. Theodore Bickel, a blessed memory, one of the great Tevyes, was on Too Jewish talking about the role some years ago, and while current generations of younger Jews have moved on from Fiddler, it was absolutely ubiquitous when I was growing up. I remember seeing a summer stock production of it in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, best known now as the center of the Aryan Nation, on a camping trip with my parents in which the excellent show had not a single Jewish cast member. I've consulted on Jewish aspects of the production a couple of times when it was performed here in Tucson and elsewhere, and I did a guest celebrity walk-on, not sure why I was considered a celebrity, for a local college production not too long ago. Fiddler's universal themes of tradition and change and the rough truth beneath its sentimentalized depiction of real-life expulsion and migration are just as relevant today as ever. And Sheldon Harnick's precise lyrics and rich, generous humor were essential to those messages. May his memory bring blessings. One more brief remembrance. James Crown, the billionaire scion of the ultra-wealthy Crown philanthropic family of Chicago, died last week in a raceway crash as he celebrated his 70th birthday. Crown was driving on a race course in Aspen, Colorado. Apparently it's an amateur opportunity to drive really fast, and crashed into a wall. The Crown family is well known for its support of major Jewish causes, not just in the Chicago area, but nationally and internationally. Letters of remembrance came from former Presidents Bill Clinton and Barack Obama, as well as many Chicago area leaders, including past two Jewish guests, Steve Nassetier, of the Chicago Federation. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews Around the World.
The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. We welcome back to Two Jewish Our Guests this morning, Dr. Daniel Grove and Rabbi Alexander Seinfeld. They're the co-authors of Body and Soul, The Torah Path to Health, Fitness, and a Holy Life. And no, it's not, I'm sure you're not Jerry Seinfeld's cousin. I just had to throw that in there.
I have a rule, sir. I only answer that question once a month.
Yeah, I'm sure it comes frequently. So one of the really fascinating things that you explore here, look, the Jewish approach, the traditional approach always goes back to Maimonides, perhaps the greatest Jewish mind in history and a physician himself who wrote extensively on this subject. But he's really undergirding himself with halachic sources. Rabbi Seinfeld, can you talk about that a little bit?
If you ask any halachic authority you mentioned Rabbi Moshe Feinstein.
Right.
Everyone I personally have asked or researched all agree that it's a mitzvah. It's an obligation. They don't all agree on the Torah source for that, which is, sounds very Talmudic, actually, if you think about it.
Yeah, it's pretty typical, isn't it?
the Talmud, you know, often will have a mitzvah and say, well, what's the source? And you have an argument debate among the Talmudic rabbis.
Right,
what is the exact chapter and verse for that precept? So, but they all seem to agree that it is one. And Maimonides, not only does Maimonides tell you that it's a mitzvah, he tells and he writes about how to fulfill this mitzvah, you know, how to eat in moderation and to exercise and so on. And some claim that if we were all just to follow Maimonides' plan only, strictly, just forget about anything else, just forget about Dr. Grove and his book, just read Maimonides, we'd all be very, very healthy. And it's possibly that's true. And in the book, we quote Rambam a lot, but we also are not necessarily accepting what he says as current medicine until we can verify that with the current medical sources.
Dr. Grove, it does seem that sometimes the Jewish diet is designed for obesity and unfitness. Can you address that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, in some ways it is, because especially Jews that came from Europe, right? So if you live in impoverished times where there's food scarcity, then you're going to want to have a diet that is maximally calorie dense. You want to get as high calorie, high density food as you possibly can if you're not eating very frequently and if you're not sure about the source of the food.
Sure.
So you're right. It is actually designed to make you gain weight, but only because it was designed in a time when people weren't eating the quantities that we eat today, and they weren't as nearly as sedentary as we are today. I mean, people were much more active. I mean, the thought of sitting down all day at a desk was something that was foreign to most people before, I don't know, maybe like 50 years ago, 60, I don't know. It's a recent thing. So the fact that the combination of we have more access to calorie-dense food that's not just calorie-dense but also designed intentionally to get us to eat more of it, and we're much less active, it's created sort of a perfect storm of poor health.
And obviously, you know, eating is part of, boy, every Jewish holiday, family experience. You know, to say that food is central to Jewish culture is to miss the point. It is pivotal. Even Yom Kippur has to end with a break fast, right? So how do you address this in the book? And what are the halachic sources, the Jewish sources, and then what are the medical insights on this?
Well, you reference the Rambam, Maimonides, and he, one of the things he teaches, and throughout the other rabbinic writings, is the great, I don't want to call it a sin, because I don't like the word sin, but it's called an error and problem of overeating, in Hebrew called achila gasa, that one must avoid at all, very strictly, this mistake of achila gasa. So even if you just have that in mind and you go into a big banquet and know that I cannot commit achila gasa, I have to make sure I don't do that. Even that alone ought to impact how you eat. Right?
I mean, when you think that in idiomatic English it's called pigging out, no Jew should want to do that, right?
Yeah,
right, right. And so part of what we address is just teaching people this concept. Like, become more mindful when you eat, and there's tricks. There's tricks that we can try to follow that will help us avoid that. Which is, for example, slowing down, eating your food more slowly. By the way, you'll get more enjoyment from it. When you chew your food, you taste it more. You'll actually enjoy it more, and you're more less likely to pig out.
Dr. Grove, in addressing this, you know, it seems essential in Judaism always to have food, right? How do you suggest that people address it? Not only, just sort of psychologically, because there's a lot of psychology even in the mitzvot here, right?
Yeah, so I mean, I'm not a psychologist, but I'm a Baal Tshuva, right? So what that means is that I had no restrictions on eating, and then at some point in my life I said, oh, I need to start making decisions about what I eat and what I don't eat based on a higher value, right? And that doesn't necessarily have to mean what I eat or what I don't eat necessarily in terms of the actual foods, which it does, but that can also apply to what I eat and what I don't eat in terms of quantities or in terms of types of food. So we are a culture, we are a people that is highly, highly disciplined in what we eat. And I think that if we could apply that same level of discipline for not eating something without a good heksher, to not eating too much of something that's not healthy, I think that that's a mindset issue. And not that that's easy, right? Because we're dealing with very, like, very complicated psychological issues. But people often try to negotiate with me about these things. They say, oh, well, can I have this? Or why can't I have that? Or it's too hard. And my response is generally like, you know, I would love to be able to give you a break. You know what I mean? Like, I wish there was leeway, but if the things that the excess weight does to the body are not really negotiable.
But you're talking about changing habits, and you can't change habits unless you change permanently, unless you change your mindset. I'll give you an example. A person wants to lose weight, and their doctor tells them you got to lose weight, or their friends tell them, or they just want to. They feel like I'm overweight. I would like to be thinner. So if they go on a diet, and they succeed at losing the weight that they want to lose, guess what's going to happen? The diet's over, and they're going to gain it back. If they haven't fundamentally changed the way they relate to food, the diet is 95% of the time is going to fail in long term. They won't succeed. And this is true. okay?
Yeah.
What's the way to change your mindset? So this is what we put in the book, chapter one. You start to see yourself not as a hungry animal, as most of us see ourselves when we're hungry, but you're a creature created in the image of God, B'Tselem Elohim. You have a much higher purpose in life than just simply to fill your belly. And if you start to see yourself as a holy being, an image of a God creature, a B'Tselem Elohim, that mindset will slowly but surely impact how you relate to food, which is the key to long success, whether with food or exercise or any such change.
I feel like we could talk for a great deal longer about this book and about like living a healthy Jewish life. If you're going to exercise your spirituality, you should also, you know, if you're going to exercise in davening and doing mitzvot, you should also do the mitzvot of taking care of your body. The book is called Body and Soul, The Torah Path to Health, Fitness, and a Holy Life by Rabbi Alexander Seinfeld, Dr. Daniel Grove. I want to thank you both for a great visit here on Two Jewish. Where can people go to find out more about you, to find out more about the book?
We would love for them to come to our new website, which we launched, called TorahHealth.org, where not only can they access free of charge a lot of the wisdom that's in the book, we're trying to put it out there for in different formats for people who want to get a video or an audio or excerpts or connect with us, get on our mailing list, and the more the merrier, because this is we're only going to solve this problem for the world, the worldwide problem, really, not just a Jewish problem. By everybody pitching in, making a grassroots movement. That's our goal. TorahHealth.org.
TorahHealth.org. Thank you both so much.
Thanks for having us.
Pleasure. Thank you very much.
When we come back on Two Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson.
Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Two Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next week. Our guest will be Martin Bodek, creator of the Festivus Haggadah, the Emoji Haggadah, the Coronavirus Haggadah, and the Shakespeare Haggadah, and author of the new memoir, Zadie's War, Four Armies, Three Continents, Two Brothers, and One Man's Impossible Story of Endurance. Don't miss it. And please, join us at Congregation Beit Simcha every Friday night for services in Onig Shabbat at 6:30 p.m., Saturday morning too, 9 a.m. Torah study, 10 a.m. services, Torah reading, and Kiddush, live in person and available on our Facebook page. Play us out. Here's a kitschy but classic song by Jewish singer Neil Diamond. It's in honor of the 4th of July this coming week, Coming to America. Neil Diamond is the source of a new Broadway musical about his music, featuring, of course, his songs, by the way. My friends, have a great 4th of July, a Shavuot Tov, a good week, a healthy week, and a week we pray profoundly of peace.
Far, we've been traveling far, without a home, but not without a star. It seems so far away. We're traveling light today, in the eye of the storm, in the eye of the storm. Home to a new and a shiny place. Make our bed and we'll say our grace. Freedom's light burning warm. Freedom.
was light burning warm. Everywhere around the world, they come to America. Every time that flag's unfurled, they come to America. Got a dream to take them there.
Sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.